When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode of Swole Patrol is brought to you by Molecule, the only air purifier that actually destroys pollutants. Offer is $75 off your first order. You heard me correctly. Visit Molecule, that's MOLEKULE.com, and at checkout, enter the promo code SWOLE, SWOLE. Dr. Drew and I know you're going to love it.
It's the Swole Patrol, it's the Swole Patrol, the best health and fitness podcast that ever lived today. We're talking to an Olympian, someone who made our country so super proud. She's the oldest swimmer to ever compete in the Olympics. And if she was 75 years old, she could still kick my ass because I am so fat and dumb.
Yeah, well done. Yeah.
Woo! Oh my God!
Where'd that right off the top of my head, that's where it came from. Dr.
You channeled it. Weird.
You may have put together, if you're a fan of sports in any way, if you're a fan of any high level athletics, you may have been able to piece together that our guest today is Dara Torres, and it is truly an honor to talk to you. Thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me. That was quite an intro. I don't think usually I hear the Olympics theme, so I'm kind of digging that one. I don't know who sang that, but it was pretty cool.
That was me, Mike, and I tried
to. Oh, Mike.
My son wrote it, and then Mike sings to it every show differently.
Yeah.
He channels some. Well, sometimes it's a little disturbing.
Yeah.
This time it was nice.
I got to be honest. You are a guest that there's some guests that encourage me to be dirty and filthy. And there's something about you, Ms. Torres, that I felt like I owed you the respect to not be gross.
Not be your usual self.
Yeah.
That's good.
Well, I grew up with four older brothers, so I've seen plenty of gross before, and I'm actually fine with it. So I'm very laid back.
It's good to know.
Don't encourage.
But it was nice. That was a nice song. I appreciate that.
Think about what happened when you encouraged your brothers. Here it comes.
The funny thing about you.
Well, thanks for having me on, you guys. No, I'm psyched about this.
Believe me, it is truly our pleasure. The funny thing about you, and as I was just like researching you and thinking about your life, you put in so much effort, continuous, prolonged, painstaking effort for something that lasts such a small amount of time. How do you mentally deal with, you know, the years, sometimes, you know, 4 years of preparation for something that can last mere minutes?
You know, I don't think any Olympic athlete that is in a sport that can go by very quickly thinks about, why am I doing this? I mean, my best race is literally 24 seconds long.
Oh my God.
And I don't think of it that way. I think of it more that I have this goal, and I've always been a goal setter. I mean, I was looking through, someone sent me some old magazines the other day, my old swim coach from high school, which I'm not even going to tell how many years ago that was, but that was a long time ago. And one of them was Sports Illustrated. And I looked in it and I saw when I was 16, I used to put like poster boards on my wall with a goal time of what I wanted to swim if I made the Olympic team and what place I wanted to get. And so I've always been a goal setter my whole entire life. I thought I was more when I was older, but when I look back, I realized I did that when I was younger too. And I think when you set goals, no matter what the goal is, and for me, it wasn't about like, oh, I'm only swimming a short race. It's like, I want this gold medal. And when you have that in your mind and if you're a very determined person, which probably 99% of Olympic athletes are, you don't think about all the hard training. You just think about reaching that goal.
And Mike, you're familiar with on the weightlifting side. I mean, you guys walk over to a bar and lift it and it's over. And you don't think about
but
that.
That is the training in and of itself. You know what I'm saying?
I understand,
like a basketball player, you prepare for a season.
Yeah.
You know, a football player the same way.
I get it.
And even an Olympic athlete that was a hockey player, you still have a 2-hour match. I'm just imagining 4 years of effort to go into 24 24 seconds. Yeah. It's got to be such a mind F, you know? Yeah.
And I guess divers at least do different dives and different
levels. It's a prolonged thing, you know what I'm saying? People who race, it's got to be such difficult.
Same with track and field, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Anything you race at.
And it's not just 4 years, if you think about it. You're actually doing it your whole entire life.
Right.
It's just a matter of, you know, the Olympics happen every 4 years. But my first Olympics, you know, I was 17 years old, and I started, you know, on a team when I was 7 or 8. So it's a long time.
Was it hard for you being 17 years old and an Olympian? Because I felt like I had a horrible time in high school, and it was miserable because I felt awkward, and I was always conscious about what other kids thought of me. And I'm pretty sure that most everyone else who's a breathing human has the same experience. When you're special, I mean, because you were special and you were unique, did it make it hard for you?
I went to an all-girls private school in LA it's now called Harvard Westlake, but it was called Westlake back then.
Oh, yes.
And I kind of stood out like a sore thumb only because I was this jock and, you know, the girls were very girly and feminine. And on the weekends, I'd be at swim meets and they'd go like school dances and stuff. And so I kind of felt a little awkward. And then, you know, I broke my first world record when I was 15. So I think I was like just going into ninth grade headmaster like posted it on like the main stairs going into the school. And I was so embarrassed. And then after that, like people started to get a little more sort of into it, about like what was going on, but still I definitely was a little bit different compared to a lot of the girls there. And then when I just finished my junior in high school, I came back for my senior year and I came back to the school to get all my book supplies and everything like a few days before school started. And the headmaster had said to me, and I just won that gold medal and said, "Hey, can you bring your medal?" And I said, "Yeah, I'll bring it, but I really don't want to make a big deal about it. I just, you know, I'll bring it into your office. I'll show you and then that'll be it." He's like, "Okay, yeah, sure. No problem." And so I came in and first thing I did was bring it to him. I said, "Look, hold on to it for the day because I obviously don't want to lose this. And I'll come back at the end of the day to pick it up." And sure enough, like an hour later, he calls an assembly and then he starts like playing the Olympic theme. And I'm like, oh, because I like to kind of go under the radar, you know? And I was like, oh my God.
Oh,
and
no.
He made me come up and like put it around my neck in front of the whole school. Then I really felt crazy because everyone was like whispering as I walked by and I just couldn't be like myself. And I felt like I did a really good job of sort of hiding it all those high school years until, you know, my senior year and the headmaster did that to me.
Oh my God. Was it still an all girls school then?
Yeah, it was. It didn't change until a few years after I graduated.
So just, you know, Mike and I are I went to Polytechnic in Pasadena. Mike went to Sam Rio High. I went to college with a bunch I went to college with a bunch of Harvard guys. And
very familiar.
Yeah, very
good
familiar.
Good old Harvard Westlake. why is it that adults don't remember how embarrassing it is?
I know. Did you that's what I wonder. Did you ever speak to him after the fact as an adult later, or is it just something that went by?
Oh no, I spoke to him as a 17-year-old later. I was like, what the hell? Like, and he's like, "Well, if I had told you I was going to do this, you wouldn't want to do it." I'm like, "Yeah, exactly.
That's the point. You fucking prick.
Like, why would you do it?" And it was like, and it was never the same. Like, people just looked at me differently. And like I said, except for him posting that, like, after I broke a world record, like, after him posting that, it kind of faded. And then I just kind of went about my way. And yeah, people, like, knew I wasn't always around the weekends, but I never, like, you know, advertise that I was, you know, training for Olympics or anything. I just kind of did my own thing. And I don't want to say ruined my senior year, but I definitely, like, I didn't know who were my friends and who just liked me because, you know, I won a gold medal.
And not only that, it triggers envy and discomfort and embarrassment on their part. Yeah. It's just all over the place.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
How long did he stay headmaster of that school?
You what?
Did he stay headmaster of that school for a long time? I'm not sure that's the right job for
him. Actually, he did. You know, I mean, I'm not a mean person or anything, so I didn't like, I just kind of was like, you know, giving him grief about it afterwards.
Yeah.
And then I don't hold grudges. I don't, like, I let things go, so I just kind of let it go. But I kind of had the consequences of it, you know, for the rest of the year, but I never said anything after that.
Speaking of grudges, were there people that you were gunning for in your Olympic career that you did have grudges against or maintain some sort of, you know, acrimony with, anything like that?
Yeah, you know, There was one girl who, like, I'm a very friendly person, and like when I'm in the water, I want to kick everyone's ass and they're all my enemies. But the minute I get out, I'm very good about leaving it in the pool. And that's the way I've always been. And I learned, you know, from older swimmers, there was a girl who, when I broke my first world record, she was like the, you know, sprinter of the U.S. and I happened to beat her and she was like 7 years older than me and stuff. And so it was kind of a big deal, but I really looked up to her because her name was Jill Sterkel, and I'll never forget, at the Olympic Games, for example, my first Olympics, she was an alternate on a relay, and I was, you know, not an alternate, and I was going to swim in the prelims and then swim in the finals, and I swam horrible in the morning, like horrible in the prelims, and they had never, if you get in the top four at Olympic trials, you're automatically going to swim in the finals at night, no matter what. The two alternates will swim in the morning too. And so when I swam so poorly, they were talking about taking me off and taking one of the alternates and putting them on in the finals. And she was one of them. And she basically took me under her wing. And she, I think she realized that I was nervous because of the whole atmosphere of being in the Olympic Games. And I just needed a distraction. So she had me like do puzzles during the day. She had me watching soap operas, which I never watched before in my life, and got addicted immediately to like, oh, my children and One Life to Live and all those. And
they're addicting.
She really kind of took me under her wings, and the coaches were like, okay, you know, we'll have Dara do it. You know, she did earn this and stuff. And I just couldn't believe that this person who like was supposed to take my spot was like helping me try to get through the nerves of being in the Olympic Games at, you know, as a teenager and stuff. And
then
another thing that happened,
I'm going to bet somebody did that for her.
Yeah, I don't know. And then another thing that happened is like a year or two later, I was at a meet and I was in the heat before her in the same lane in the prelims. And there were a couple false starts and the pool was super cold and I was shivering. And she basically took her towel off of her and put it around me until I got up and swam my event. And so, you know, I admired that a lot and I'm kind of like that anyway, but it just made me show that, you know, you leave your competing in the water and, you know, outside of the water, you're just friends with everyone. But to answer your question, there was a girl, that I trained with in 2000 at Stanford, and the coach had let me swim on the team because up until that point, I hadn't been to an Olympics in an individual event. All the Olympics up to that point, the three Olympics I'd been to in 84, 88, 92 were all in relays. And so, I wanted to train in 2000 and he let me come out and train at Stanford. And this girl wasn't intimidated by me because she had beaten me up to that point and, you know, knew I wasn't like very good at individual events. And so she's like, yeah, come swim and stuff. And after about 4 months, I was beating her in workouts, beating her in meets, and she had me kicked off the team.
Ooh.
And so I had to swim, because these girls either went to Stanford or were at Stanford training, and I wasn't. I was like sort of an outsider. I went to University of Florida, and she had me kicked off the team. And so after that happened, I was like, oh my God, where am I going to go? Like I'm in the middle of training and I still have 6 months of training until trials. And so, the coach came up to me and said, you know what? You know, this girl may have a say in what's going on in the team, but there's nothing that says I can't train you individually.
Yeah.
And so he did. And so, you know, for her, it was a blessing in disguise for me because here I got one-on-one coaching, you know, from this coach.
That's
and I ended up beating her in the Olympic Games and going faster than her, you know, because she thought she was doing something for herself to get me kicked off the team. But then I got one-on-one attention, you know, with the coach for the next 6 months. So it actually worked to my advantage.
Those stories drive me crazy. People politicking like that. But my,
oh yeah, it was bad. But that's really the only one. I mean, you always have people you want to meet, but they're never really per se my enemies.
And Mike, Dara just said something I know comes out of your mouth very frequently. She said, when I broke my first record, my first world record.
Yeah, no, it happens all the time.
After I broke my first world
record. I don't mean it to sound like cocky or anything.
No,
like
you
that.
Said it matter-of-factly. That's what I was, that's why I thought it was
that.
Funny.
You've
earned it was like,
that right.
It was, just, like, it was like, wow, when somebody can say that and say it that casually is extraordinary.
Yeah, well, but, I mean, you do the same thing in an intellectual arena.
Oh, please.
You know.
No, not even. No, not
yeah,
even.
You're like, when I was doing my first study on the Golgi apparatus, and I'm like, what the fuck?
Right. So,
but the other thing, Dar, you said something about, I'm taking you way back in the story you just told, to having had a bad swim. I guess the morning of the Olympic trials or something. And what makes a bad swim? Because our listeners, you know, are interested in performance and stuff. And what do you look back and go, why was that a bad swim, and evaluate it, or just
is it just the time?
Is it just you didn't sleep right?
It's
that
more
night?
The time than anything, because as an athlete, I'm very much about feel, and the coaches tell you to, like, when you're warming up, don't go off how you feel, because if you don't feel good in a warm up, you're automatically going to think you're not going to have a good swim because you're not going to feel good in your swim. So it's not about that. It's more so about the time. So like I said, Olympic trials, in the events that I swim, in one of the events for relays in the 100 freestyle, they'll take up to six people to go to the Olympic Games. And so I had gotten fourth, and the time I did at trials, my time at the Olympic Games in the prelims were all probably a second and a half slower than what I did at Olympic trials. And that's a big difference, not only just in general, but also I was doing a relay start at the Olympic Games, and you get, like, you can take a second off for a relay start, because a relay start is much quicker than doing a regular flat start that you do in an individual event. So it was really, really a slow time. So that's what I meant by a bad swim.
Hey, we're going to take a quick break to talk about Molecule, something awesome. Molecule is an air filtration system. It replaces 50 years of antiquated technology, okay? It goes beyond HEPA filtration.
So let's say that again, because it's important to note that
the air filtration world
has been based on technology, sort of World War II level technology.
Yeah.
Finally, we're moving it forward.
It goes beyond HEPA filtration to not just capture, but completely destroy the full spectrum of indoor air pollutants, including those 1,000 times smaller than a HEPA filter can trap. You hear me? Molecule makes a meaningful impact, and this means a lot for me, on asthma and allergy sufferers.
You know, I've read their literature. I looked at this product pretty carefully, and my wife has allergies, so we're going to be using it a lot in our households. And I've had this dry eye syndrome since I had my PRK procedure. It's been driving me insane.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping this will help with that as well. So I am going to become a religious user, sort of wherever we are. And I like the idea that they call this the Apple of air purifiers.
Yeah.
I like that. And I I've looked at the literature. There's some stuff that was presented to the American College of Asthma, Allergy, and Immunology. It's very, very impressive. So it's not trivial. It's based in good science.
And it, like you pointed out, is the Apple of air purifiers. The design is cool. It's not going to make your house look all junky. You know, you've
no,
had
no, no.
Yeah. It's, the design is nice, and it's sleek. And it's also backed by the EPA, so you know you're not going to be destroying the earth. Molecule's claims on this technology have been tested and verified by third-party laboratories like the University of Minnesota, University of South Florida, and the South Florida Center for Biological Defense. Molecule's technology has been personally effective and verified by science people, but most importantly, it's been tested by real people. Molecule has already helped allergy and asthma sufferers like myself around the country better cope with their conditions and significantly reduce their symptoms, especially now, people. I hate to, you know, talk about something so sad, but during these California wildfires,
oh, yeah,
for those of you listening in Southern California, get that air filtration system, and there's no better one than good old Molecule. And right now, Dr. Drew, tell them about the special offer.
And for $75 off your first order, visit Molecule, MOLEKULE.com, and at checkout, enter the promo code SWOLE.
SWOLE. Dr. Drew and I both know you're going to love it.
And we're back.
Welcome back to the Swole Patrol. Our guest is an Olympian. Dr. Drew and I, we bump elbows with Olympians and medal winners all day
all
in
day
our
long.
Personal life, but rarely.
You were musing about something before the break.
Yeah, this sounds like a dumb question. Okay, I have to know. And don't worry. There's nothing embarrassing or anything. It just kind of seems kind of dumb and boneheaded. But I gotta feel like if you're Billy Joel and there's a piano at a party, on your way there, you're like, oh fuck, I'm the piano man. They're gonna.
Yeah.
Do you go to pool parties and are people like, like, are you like, oh fuck, everyone's gonna expect me, and if I do want to swim, everyone's gonna be staring at me. Is there an odd, weird, awkward feeling to being at anywhere where there's public, you know,
or
the public's
beach
in a pool?
Anything.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Okay. Well, I have two things. That first of all, I think I try not to, like, you know, when I get in a pool, I like to maybe swim a lap or two, and so I try like to not do that to make, you know, like I'm showing off. And
sure.
So I'll just kind of like swim my head up. But I think people get like look at me more so because I'm in shape for my age. I think more than anything, like with being in a swimsuit or being in a two piece and stuff, people are like, oh fuck, you know, like seriously, you have to wear a two piece. And then the other thing is, so I moved to Massachusetts about 6 years ago, and my husband was already up here, and I moved from Florida, and I just finished my Olympic trials, and my sixth Olympic trials, and I missed the team by like 9/100ths of a second. So I was moving up here, and when I got here, I look in our backyard, and our pool in the tile where the water's already filled in has the Olympic rings in them. Oh, and I looked at my husband. I'm like, what the fuck is that? He was like, oh, surprise. And I'm like, are you serious? And he's like, oh yeah, I thought your mom and I thought you'd really enjoy that. And I'm like, okay, like if you know me well enough at this point, which we dated for a couple of years already, like you know that I'm not vain. I don't like people to know that I'm in the Olympics unless they like ask me. And so why would I want huge Olympic rings like in my pool? And the fact that we're having a pool party for my daughter in like a couple of weeks at our new school, and there are the Olympic rings. And I was like, I didn't know what to do. I'm like, we're taking all the water out. You're going to redo this, and there's going to be no Olympic rings in the pool, you know? And obviously we ended up not being able to do that because it would have cost a lot of money, but I couldn't even believe it. So every time we have a pool party here, I have to explain, like people think like I put the Olympic rings in the pool because I'm so proud that I was an Olympian.
How do you have a pool?
I have to tell people that wasn't me.
How do you have a pool in Massachusetts anyway?
Not a bad question.
Excuse me?
How do you have a pool in Massachusetts at all?
Well, you know, it's like 2 months a year, but yeah.
You know. That's why people have above ground pools, is because it's so cold.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Transitioning into the idea of like training and health and fitness. I would imagine that with just like track and field, where your weight is a factor, power to weight ratio in swimming. Diet must have been incredibly important to you both during your swimming career and now.
Yeah, it was, and now it's not. So, I mean, I shouldn't say it's not. Okay, let me just explain. So, when I was growing up, I was a skinny, lanky kid, and I told you how, you know, this girl, Jill Sterkel, had helped me, and she probably weighed, I would think, 50 pounds heavier than me. And she was a big, just strong, my Sheila girl, and I was this lanky string bean, and I was always like that. And I'll never forget, I got into University of Florida, and about 3 or 4 weeks before I was supposed to move out there from California, I was at a swim meet, and the head coach at UF had come up to me and said, hey, you know, it'd be really great if you like lost 10 pounds before you got to school in a month. I looked at him like, and I've never had anyone tell me that before. And you know, you're 16, 17, your body's changing as a girl going into a woman, and it just happens. You gain some weight, and I didn't really think anything of it. And I thought he was kind of kidding. And so I went on vacation with my family. I came back, moved to Florida, and he was a coach that was very obsessed with weight. And he would weigh us every Monday afternoon to start our week.
Damn.
And would decide, okay, he's looking at you and be like, you know, by next week, you need to lose like 2 or 3 pounds. Wow. And if we didn't lose the weight, he was a crazy coach too, in the sense that he trained us so hard, like would do crazy things on that. We'd pull sleds on the football field. We'd run up and down stadium stairs. We'd do weighted jump ropes. This is in addition to like 2-2.5 hours of swim workouts.
Oh my God.
Twice a day. And so if you didn't make weight, the only mornings we had off, besides we had all day Sunday off, but Tuesday and Thursday mornings were the only mornings we had off. And if we didn't lose the 2 or 3 pounds or whatever weight he told us we had to lose by the next Monday, we would have to go, we'd be the breakfast club and have to swim those mornings too. So no one wanted to, you know, not do what he told us to do. And so, what happened was I went into one of the dorm bathrooms one time and I was like really upset, and a girl came up to me and she's like, what's wrong? I'm like, I'm not losing this weight and I have to, and my, you know, I have to do extra workouts. And she's like, oh, it's so easy. You know, you just go in the toilet, you eat whatever you want and then throw up and then you're fine. And so, unfortunately, I developed bulimia because of this, with this girl sort of showing me what to do. And then my coach figuring out that we were starving ourselves all day Sunday and all day Monday. And so we weighed ourselves and then we'd go in the locker room and stuff our faces so we could at least get through workout and have some energy.
Wow.
He decided to not tell us when he was weighing us. And it just snowballed and got into this, you know, big sort of issue for me. And so the whole entire time I was in college, I was bulimic, and also after college. So I developed a very, very big fear of food. And even though I ended up going to a psychologist and sort of dealing with the issues and whatever was like triggering it, I finally sort of got over it, but still had many fears of food. And that was basically my college years. And then I decided to come back and swim in 92, which would have been my third Olympic Games. And the coach said to me, look, you know, I know you had some eating issues and you got to make sure that you're, you know, definitely healed before you come, because I don't want you to start training and having this. And I was fine. But then once I got over those Olympics, I had like 7 years off where I thought I was retired. And, you know, still had just major fears of food. And when I decided to go back and train again in 2000 with that Stanford team, you know, the coach, sort of introduced the Atkins diet to me. And he's like, oh, you know, you can have burgers and this, but, you know, just have half a bun and not a whole bun and do this. And it actually really helps me get over my fear of food. You know, because he said you can have ice cream because it has less calories than, or less sugar than frozen yogurt and this and that. And so his sort of, knowledge and sort of addiction to us being more high protein and not as much carbs really helped me get over my eating disorder. So after that happened, I really tried not to limit myself with what I'd eat. As far as like being so conscious about my weight, and I never got on a scale anymore. I, you know, got over my fear of foods. And so I really try not to deprive myself of food. So the way I like look at myself now, I eat what I want, but I eat, you know, very small portions of if it's something that really isn't healthy for you. So if I make chocolate chip cookies, I may have like a half of one or one or whatever, and then I'll just kind of keep them to the side until like the next day. Like I don't overindulge, but I don't deprive myself of food.
I think it's a healthy balance. I mean, that's really what it's all about, is, you know, not becoming obsessive, but at the same time, not allowing yourself to punish your body with too much food. What is the secret to, I mean, I obviously there's probably a myriad of secrets, but your ability to not only perform at a high level, well into the age when most people aren't, but your ability to look amazing while doing it, is really, it goes against what we've always been taught is possible. I mean, I'm going to be 40 next year. And so I'm already doing the self-talk where it's like, well, I can't do that anymore. I mean, that's not for me. I'm a 40-year-old man now. What is it? What is it? Is it mind frame? Is it just a change of perspective that was made it capable for you to be a high level Olympic athlete at an age when most people are thinking about retirement?
You know, I think what helped me, and I didn't do this, you know, on purpose, but after I swam my first two Olympics and was kind of heavy into my, you know, eating disorder, I had retired after my last year of college, eligibility in swimming. And I pretty much thought I was done. And then I ended up moving to New York, work with NBC Sports a little bit, and sort of got the itch again to go back and swim. And so I came back and trained for 92. And at that time I was 25 years old, and I was the oldest one on the team because you didn't see a lot of athletes after college competing. And so they called me the grandma on the team. And then I went to those Olympics and still didn't get an individual medal. You know, I had four medals in relays up to that point in three Olympics. And I was like, okay, I'm done. You know, I'm done swimming. That's it. I am very much about exercise. I love health and fitness. Like I love the way exercise makes you feel. It relieves stress, but I also love the way it makes you look. And so in those years from the 92 Olympics until I decided I wanted to come back in 99, I worked out, you know. I mean, swimming's a type of sport where you burn so many calories that swimmers, when they retire, have such an issue with gaining weight because they're so used to having such a high metabolism from all the training that we did. I mean, it's a year-round sport. We do double workouts a day. It's a lot of intense training. So your body gets used to that. So a lot of swimmers, you know, end up gaining a lot of weight because they don't realize that you still have to kind of work out in order to, you know, maintain a decent body. And so I've always done that. And I think that what's allowed me to continue on at a later age is that I retired from the sport a number of times and it allowed my body to recover. I think if I had swum straight through from the first Olympics when I was 17 to my last Olympic trials when I was 45, there's no way I could have done that on all those years straight because my body would have given out. I couldn't recover. So when I decided to come back in 2008 for those Olympics, I thought, okay, yeah, I could do what the young kids are doing. I'm 39 years old. This is no big deal or whatever. That first week of training, like, I couldn't do double workouts. I'm like, I can't do this. Like, I can't do what these teenagers and 20-year-olds are doing. I really had to listen to my body. And I think that's really important. I think, first of all, people get stuck in a routine. You know, when you go to a gym, you sort of do the same thing over and over again. And what I would do is I would mix my workouts up. Like right now, I don't swim anymore. I may swim like once a week or twice a week, but I go to boxing, I do bar method, I do spinning, I do a lot of different things so my body doesn't like plateau and get used to doing the same thing. I also exercise to eat because I love to eat. So I know, okay, if I'm going to eat a lot, I need to exercise. And so I just do everything like proportionally and I listen to my body. And if my body needs to rest, I let it rest. When I was younger and I had that eating disorder, I never rested. Like I just kept working out and working out and working out.
Remember Sam Shocker, our friend who was an NCAA swimmer. Actually, she was in the Olympic trials, I think. And she says she can't go near a pool anymore. I think she was one that said that. Yeah, she can't stand it anymore.
Yeah, but you do. You burn out. I mean, if you think about it, you're basically staring at a black line under the water. You know, you maybe get, you know, for 2 hours straight in a workout, and you maybe get like maybe 2 or 3 weeks off a year, and you get back into training again. So it's definitely a year-round sport.
So have you ever thought about maybe writing about or really getting deeper into your story about with eating disorder? I mean, so, you know, to help other women, because it's such a common thing.
Yeah, you know, I at first I never talked about it, and that's part of having the eating disorder is you hide everything. Yeah. You know, what happened for me is for the first like 4 years that I had it, I was in college and I hid it, and I think maybe people thought I did had a problem, but you can see like my pictures are hanging up along with, you know, the rest of the, you know, swimming graduates or whatever at the UF you know, auditorium or whatever, wherever the swimming is, they call it the O-Dome, the Connell Center. And you could see my cheeks are like so puffy and stuff from, you know,
vomiting
yeah. and stuff like that. And it just, you know, it was just something that you hid for a long time. And, my mom basically said to me once I graduated college, cause she didn't know exactly what was going on. She's like, you know, you really need to get a physical. And, you know, I think it would just help you. And so I moved to New York and I saw a doctor there and I got a physical, and she started asking me all these crazy questions at the end. And one of the questions was, have you ever like, you know, binge and purge? I'm like, no, like that. And then I laughed and I felt so guilty for lying. I called her up. I said, yeah, actually I did. I do binge and purge. And then she had me come back in, and then the whole process started of trying to get help. But it's something that you hide a lot. And it took me a couple years, probably a number of years to feel okay with talking about it. And when I do, meet with groups and especially like young women or young girls, I try to talk about it but I haven't really thought about like talking about, you know, or writing a book about it. But I do talk about the subject when I am in a certain environment where I think people would benefit from it.
How'd you get involved with Bar Method?
Oh, you know, this is so funny. So, I've had numerous injuries considering I'm so old over the years. And the most recent ones for me in 08 and 2012 were my knees.
I just want to, sorry to interrupt, but Dr. Drew gets the shivers when you say that you're so old.
Did you see me? I reacted.
Dr. Drew's going to have his 78th
birthday. Actually, I physically reacted, and then I thought, oh, that's your new preoccupation. Now it's not the eating, now it's the aging, right?
Okay, wait, I am 51, so I am older. But you know, when you're training and at an older age and you're putting yourself through so much to try to be at the elite level with young kids, it does wreak havoc on your body. And so, my siblings and my mom, like, they're all very thin and lean. And so that's just the way I'm made up. For me personally, I had to really find, people that would like help me with my training, because I did think I could do what young kids did, and I realized that I couldn't with my body. And so I found a sponsor, was able to hire people to help me be the best I can be. Like, for example, my body just didn't recover. And so what I did is I had these trainers come, and they would walk on me on my legs and on my back and on both sides, like on my quads, my hamstrings, And then they would do this stretching routine on me where I would resist against them, and then they would sort of rotate my muscles. It's almost like if you think about taking a wet rag and rotating it to get, you know, opposite ways to get the water out. Sure. That's what they do with my muscles to get the lactic acid out of my muscles. And that's, I mean, that's basically how I survived to be able to do what I did at the age that I did. Is I had a lot of people help me with my recovery.
Hmm. And tell us about the app. Because it's very intriguing, Dare Torres,
and the health and fitness. The Bar Method Studio, right, in Wellesley?
Oh, yeah, you asked me about the Bar Method Studio. Sorry, see, I'm sold. I forget what you asked me.
No, it's fine.
That's coming.
I was like, oh, my God, wait, what did he ask me again? Okay, I'm sorry. The Bar Method. So what happened was, with all the training I was doing, I got injured with my knees, and I lost cartilage in my knees. And basically, I needed a knee replacement. And I found this doctor who does cartilage replacements instead of knee replacements. So like, if you're older, obviously like 60s, 70s, you probably want to go for the knee replacement. But, you know, I was in my 40s and I didn't want a knee replacement in my 40s. And so I saw this doctor, Dr. Minus, and he did cartilage replacement for me. Or basically they take cartilage cells out of your knees, they harvest it, and then they put it back in your knees, and it takes about a year, year and a half to grow. And you basically have all new cartilage in your knees, and it's awesome. So, but the recovery is sort of long, and I was up here. I moved up here, and I had the knee surgery. And I would take my daughter to swim practices and stuff. And this father came up to me from one of my daughter's friends and was like, "So, you know, when can you start like doing stuff on your legs?" And I'm like, "You know, it's killing me because I feel like my rear is hanging down to the back of my knees. Like I feel like I have no muscle. My leg is atrophied. My rear is atrophied. This is like killing me." And he said, "Oh, you know, there's this great workout that is probably easy on your knees called the Bar Method." I'm like, "The Bar Method?" I'm like, "I've seen Pure Bar. I've seen like Bar 3. And I'm like, what's the Bar Method?" And he started explaining to me it's like an overall toning workout. And, you know, they do lots of modifications. So maybe you should, why don't you like come with me and, you know, take a class? And I'm like, okay. And so I went to the Bar Method Studio in Wellesley, which is like 10 minutes from where I live in Dover in Massachusetts. And I completely fell in love with it. And it really is just an unbelievable workout. And so about 2 years in, there's two owners, and one of the owners decided she wanted to take her like career somewhere else and wanted to move out west to California, and she wanted to sell her portion of it. And I'm like, "I'm in. I'll buy your half," you know, because I believe so strongly in this type of workout. And I saw lots of change in my legs and my rear, and I started to get muscle again, and it was awesome. So I bought into it. And then about 2 weeks after I bought into it, almost a year ago, there was an owner's convention, and myself and my business partner flew out to the owner's convention. And I had all these owners saying, "Oh, you know, you're a teacher, right?" I'm like, "No, I'm just an owner." And they're like, "Yes, all the owners are instructors too." And so I had such peer pressure from these owners saying, "Oh, you need to be an instructor too," that I started training to be instructor, and now I'm a full-time instructor too. So I'm actually really loving it. I love teaching. I love being an owner. And it's just sort of a different atmosphere for me to be in than to just go and travel and give, you know, motivational talks and do TV. So I'm really enjoying it a lot.
Speaking of different atmosphere, I grew up in California, college in Florida. Massachusetts is very different. I lived there for a while.
It really is. It definitely is.
Yeah, how you dealing with that? I know exactly what you see is different. I've experienced it as a Californian. It's kind of great.
It's a beautiful state, yep. And I've come to meet. I've been here for 6 years, and I've come to meet a lot of great friends. I'm actually moving back to Florida next week. The cold weather is just a little bit too much for my bones.
Preach.
So I'm moving back, but I'm still going to keep my my share in the studio and still come up hopefully like once a month and teach to keep up my credentials with teaching and stuff. But it is very different. I'm a very laid back kind of girl and just kind of go with the flow and stuff. From growing up in California and living in Florida, when I moved up here, it was very different. The driving's different. The people are different. I've grown to love the place, but I can't deal with the cold. So, wherever I go, I kind of am just a very friendly person and sort of fit in right away. So that's not like, that wasn't really an issue for me moving up here, but I just, I didn't realize how different it was once I was actually up here.
It's intense. I mean, Massachusetts, you know, particularly in around Boston, it's, you know, I'm sure you're, how old are your kids now?
My daughter's 12, and okay. my husband's kids are going off to college, so it's just my 12-year-old now.
But still, I'm the education is taken very seriously in that state, and so I'm sure they're absorbing.
Yeah, they do. Yeah. They definitely do. Very seriously. They have some of the top schools in the country here. So
where are they going to college?
Very serious. Excuse me?
Where are the kids going to college?
Yeah, they're twins. So I have the girl Krista is going to GW, and the boy is going to Lucas is going to Wake Forest. So they're very excited about it.
Look at you.
So yeah,
very fun.
And then and our remaining moments, tell us about Dara Torres Health and Fitness, the app I'm looking at right now.
Oh, you know what? The app, I don't even think works anymore. Is it actually working?
I'm looking at it.
You know, it's funny because it was right when apps started to be very popular, and my trainer who I met when I was decided to make a comeback at an older age, who's just an unbelievable trainer. His name's Andy O'Brien, and he actually works with the Penguins now. He had trained Sidney Crosby starting when he was like 13 years old. So this guy's amazing. And we got approached about making a health and fitness app. We're like, oh, this is going to be great. And so we did all these different exercises, a lot of stuff that I did when I was training to teach people, you know, sort of what I did. It's not about heavy lifting. It's about doing exercises correctly, using your body weight, and you could still be lean and, you know, and thin, you know, doing these exercises and not going to the gym and lifting like 250 pounds, you know, doing leg press or something. And so we were very excited about it, but then it kind of fizzled. So I can't really promote that for you guys because I don't even think it even works anymore.
All right. It does. It crashes when you open it. I finally
there you go.
Swim Dana on Instagram and at Dara Torres on
Swim Dara.
Swim Dara. I'm sorry. Swim Dara on Instagram and at Swim Dara Torres on Twitter. You know, honestly, I've had the luxury of talking to a lot of, you know, motivational people, a lot of inspiring people. But it was a real, real pleasure to talk to you, and I appreciate you taking time out of your day to talk to us.
Yeah, please do.
Now, you sure don't say it to all your guests when you're done with them?
No, believe me. I was thinking something similar. I was thinking, please, you need to get right about all this because it could help.
Thank you. I appreciate it. It's very nice to meet you guys, and hopefully I can meet you in person sometime.
We'd love that. Thank you so much. Hey, everybody. It is the Swole Patrol podcast. You can find me on Twitter at Mike Catherwood. And Dr. Drew is at Dr. Drew, of course. Join the email list today. Send your questions, drdrew.com/contact, and put Swole at the top of the email so we can get your comments. And this will get you a weekly email reminder with a link to this show and all the great shows that Dr. Drew and I do and all the shows that Dr. Drew does by himself and, of course, with Adam Carolla, the great Ace Man. Please tell a friend and subscribe on iTunes. Don't forget to rate us 5 stars. And on Podbean or Google Play, all 3 help us out. We also are on YouTube/Dr. Drew and hope you can give us all your comments, even if you're a troll and you want to destroy our feelings and our emotions. Support our sponsors and the show. Click on the banners on drdrew.com for the links for special discounts for the products Dr. Drew and I endorse 100%. Send questions and comments to our Facebook page, facebook.com/Swole Patrol Podcast, or on Twitter @Swole Patrol Pod. And be good, be swole, #Swole Patrol.